We may be witnessing the end of a golden era of television. That's according to the TV executive who first coined the phrase peak TV in 2015. As streaming services start to scale back, the number of new original scripted TV shows is expected to shrink this year after reaching a record high of 599 last year. While streaming TV started out with a big splash, it now finds itself under pressure to produce profits. And viewers may feel this pressure in terms of streaming costs, variety, and availability. Our next guest says you can already see signs of the end of peak TV, and we need to prepare ourselves for what he thinks is coming next, trough TV. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Now, what is your favorite show to stream right now, if you have a favorite? Or is there one that you feel betrayed? You started watching it, then they stopped creating it after you finished a season or two. How do you manage the seemingly infinite number of streaming subscription options out there? You could join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Sam Adams is senior editor for Slate.com. Sam, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much for having me, Rob.
It felt for a while, Sam, like there was this infinitely expanding universe of streaming options. There were more and more channels. They got bigger and bigger, had more stuff. What's happening now?
Well, I started thinking about this thing that I ended up calling Trough TV towards the end of last summer. I didn't quite recognize the feeling at first because it had been so long, but I started to feel like there was nothing good on TV. As you mentioned, they made 600 new shows last year. That's impossible. Clearly there's something on, but it just started bringing back all these feelings from when I started watching TV in the 80s and 90s when, you know, there were weeks and months where there was nothing good to watch on. And if you didn't catch a show the first time, you might have to wait a couple of years to see it again, or you just might never see it again. And you might have to go, you know, ask your friend what happened or look up a summary on the internet. I felt it's been about 10 years of streaming TV now. It's almost exactly 10 years since House of Cards premiered on Netflix. And a lot of the stuff, those kinds of experiences seemed like they were gone forever, but they're starting to, because of the pressures you mentioned in the intro, they're starting to come back. Shows are getting canceled midstream when the stories are untold. Shows are actually disappearing from streaming, and because there's no longer a VHS or DVD backup, they're just gone for good, or at least until somebody else finds a way to turn a small profit putting them back. So it feels in a way like we're regressing to where we were before this all started. And I wouldn't say things are going exactly back to the way they were, but a lot of things that seemed like they were gone for good, it turns out that TV is still TV.
Yeah, can you talk about that? I think we have this sense that, or I had the sense that, okay, a show's up on a streaming channel, it's going to be there forever. Or maybe, you know, the rights will go to another channel or something like that. We're starting to see newer shows, older shows like Arrested Development, just what? Disappear?
Right. One of the examples that got me thinking about this is Arrested Development. It's, I think, you know, the second or third sort of big high profile Netflix original. They revived this sort of beloved but low rated Fox sitcom, put all three seasons on Netflix, and then they made two new seasons. And now, 10 years later, those agreements have expired. The first three seasons that were made for Fox in the old ecosystem, those are just, I think, on Hulu now. You can find them just somewhere else on the internet other than Netflix. But the two seasons that got made for Netflix are just kind of gone now. Nobody knows where you can find them or if you're going to be able to find them. I think one of them you can buy digitally, and then one of them is just kind of in limbo. HBO Max last year, because of the merger and new corporate leadership, they had this basically this whole initiative to kind of cut a lot of dead weight from the HBO Max service. And that included both, you know, a $1 billion series like Westworld and also these tiny little shows with beloved followings like the Gordita Chronicles. And some of those have gone to show places like Tubi, which is basically like old-fashioned TV where there are ads in the middle and you have to watch it at the time it's on or you can't see it. And some of them, again, are just gone for now, at least.
We're talking about big changes in the world of TV, especially streaming TV, with Sam Adams, senior editor for Slate.com. He wrote a piece on this just a little while back, and you could join in at 800-642-1234. How do you stream TV? What do you stream? How do you decide which, if any, channels to subscribe to? Have you been burned by getting hooked on a show and the show has gone away. I got at least three on my list where I started. Would have watched more. There ain't no more. Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's jump into a few networks now. And to kick off Disney Plus, here's the previously on The Mandalorian from the Star Wars universe on Disney Plus, starring Pedro Pascal.
You do not cover your face. You are not Mandalorian.
You are a child of the Watch.
There is only one way. The way of the Mandalore.
Din Djarin. Have you ever removed your helmet?
I have.
Then you are a Mandalorian no more.
How can I atone?
According to creed, one may only be redeemed in the living waters beneath the mines of Mandalore.
But the mines have all been destroyed.
This is the way.
Bummer. No more Mandalorian, except there is more Mandalorian, the show. Now, Sam, Disney, where The Mandalorian airs, they've got the Star Wars properties there, but they just laid off. They announced a lot of layoffs throughout the Disney world of entertainment. What are we seeing when it comes to Disney Plus's streaming channel?
Yeah, well, what happened, just a sort of brief history of the last few years, everybody kind of rushed into the streaming arena at the same time, which happened to be, everybody was sort of planning to do it. Paramount, Disney, Warner Brothers were all planning to do this right around the time of the pandemic, obviously not knowing that was going to happen, but it made it seem like everything was going really well for a while, because obviously people had nothing to do but sit home and watch TV. But eventually, that sort of bubble burst. And now we're seeing a lot of cost cutting, retrenchment, just these massive losses. For example, so Disney is now cutting 7,000 jobs and over $5 billion in revenue, and trying to, one of the major things that happened with the executive switch last year, where they brought Bob Iger back in to replace Bob Chapek, is that Chapek had really sort of overinvested in the idea of streaming being completely the future, and Disney movies were going to go straight to streaming and not even go into movie theaters. And that just turned out to be not the way to actually make the kind of money that Disney is used to making. So it seemed like there was gold in their hills for everybody. And now that everybody is in the same hills looking for the same gold, it turns out that there's not as much as they thought.
Now, for people who like to watch cool stuff on TV, Sam, what do the next couple of years hold, do you think, when it comes to the content, the quantity, and the quality that people are going to be able to see?
Well, we're certainly going to be seeing fewer new shows. That is not something you're necessarily going to notice. I mean, if there were 600 new shows last year and there are 500 new shows this year, you're not going to notice those 100 missing shows per se. You know, there's still going to be way more TV than any human being, even one who's paid to do it for a living like me, can possibly get to. But there is an erosion in quality that I think has been creeping in. And it's the kind of thing that you don't notice unless you sort of stand back and pay a little bit of attention to it. You know, House of the Dragon kind of feels like Game of Thrones, and maybe it's not quite as good, but it's on Sunday nights at 9 on HBO, and it sort of scratches that itch, so you just go with it. But I was having a discussion with some friends just last week about the show The Americans that was on FX, and that was a real sort of golden age of TV, peak TV show. Just a really classic drama that went out over six seasons, told this really big, elaborate story with these amazing characters. And I just feel like that kind of storytelling, what really made TV special in the first place, is endangered now. Shows are not getting, a show like Schitt's Creek, which started off as a really kind of marginal property on this little Canadian network, and then after six seasons became this, you know, Emmy-dominating juggernaut, I don't think it would get to six seasons now. And so we're not getting as many of those rich, long-form stories as, you know, we like, as the kind of thing that TV does best, is really becoming harder and harder to do.
We're talking to Slate senior editor Sam Adams about the changing landscape of streaming television services, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What show, if any, or shows would you recommend streaming? What streaming services have you signed on to or happily canceled? Have you taken advantage of free trials that some streaming services offer to binge that one show and then give it all up? Is there a show you started and then it went away? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation coming up here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Sam Adams, senior editor at Slate. The headline of his recent article is Peak TV is Over. Welcome to Trough TV. We're talking about the ways that streaming television is changing and what it means for the way we watch and what we have there to watch. And you can join in at 800-642-1234 to share your streaming experiences for better or worse. How do you decide which channel to subscribe to, if any? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Rebecca is with us in Newton. Rebecca, hi.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to comment on some of the stuff I've been streaming. I'm one of those kind of people who waits until everything is done and completed, and then 2 years later, I'll watch it. So, like, now I'm watching Breaking Bad. I never saw it, so I'm new to this. And I tried when everybody else was watching, and I couldn't get into it, but now I am. So I just finished season one, and I started season two. And I said I did the same thing with, like, The Sopranos. I bought HBO Max so I could watch The Sopranos. I wanted to see what the big deal was about. Honestly, I didn't like it, and I'll tell you why. I think they make shows differently for streaming now than they used to when you had to wait a week to watch them. So if you stream something that people had to wait a week for in the previous years, it comes off differently. There's no suspense. It doesn't make as much, I don't know, the drama isn't the same.
Rebecca, thanks for that call. Okay, Sam, Rebecca gives us a lot to work with there. First of all, the wait and see approach, I often take that with shows. Now, Rebecca, with like something like Breaking Bad, it had its full run. It had a conclusion. She's not going to get burned by it being canceled halfway through. I think it's a pretty cagey way to watch shows, and I'm guessing that streamers hate that, like the people who produce it.
Rebecca's bringing up some of my very favorite topics here. One is, which I think there was a survey that came out last week that said something like 25% of American TV viewers will wait until the show is over, not just the season, but the whole thing, to start watching it. And because streamers are now canceling shows in the middle of their runs, and not even a lot of times in the last 10 years, they would say, okay, well, we're not going to give you another season, but you can have a movie, you can have four episodes, just because it's more valuable to us to have a complete story, because people don't want to start something they can't finish. They're not really playing that game anymore, and people are wise to that, and they don't want to start a story if it's not going to end. So that is really keeping people away from watching these shows. And I do think it's been interesting in the last couple of years to watch even Netflix pull away, which really branded the binge drop. That was their whole model, was you'll get the whole thing at once. You're not going to have to wait for anything. It's all yours whenever you want it. And they've been pulling back from that and releasing shows, either splitting seasons up, releasing some of their reality shows, you know, one or two episodes at a time. They're really coming back to the wisdom that the TV model that was built up over, you know, 70, 80 years of showing people something 1 week, giving people a week to think about it and anticipate what's going to happen next, and then giving another episode. There's that, people still like to watch TV that way. There's something very satisfying about that model, something that you don't start on a Friday evening and finish on Saturday night. So that's, you know, for my money, that's one of the good old things that's coming back, but it is another sign that some of the paradigm shifts that streaming was supposed to bring about have not been as total as they were going to be.
Rebecca, thanks for that call. Rebecca also brings up the idea that if you're making a show for immediate binging and streaming versus once a week, whether that's broadcast or dropping an episode, you know, every Wednesday or whatever on streaming, are you making the show differently?
Yes. I mean, there's so many ways in which that's true. And there's a whole sort of behind the scenes component to it when the business is just structured very differently now. On the Writers Guild of TV and movie writers is very close to going on strike in the next couple of weeks, in large part because the way they're paid for things has not kept up with the way streaming is structured. They're making, you know, they're paid by the episode, but these shows take longer to make. So they have fewer episodes, and each episode takes longer to make. So they're effectively making less money per hour. And they're not getting, you know, the residual payments for things being broadcast, because streaming networks don't like to tell you how many times people have seen your show. And yes, it also has the effect the episodes get longer, that the cliffhangers, I think, get less compelling, because all you have to do is convince somebody to not get up off their couch or hit a button. You don't have to convince them to, like, physically turn it on their TV a week So I think it does. I mean, it's, you know, streaming has done so many wonderful things for television, and I want to pretend like things are worse now than they were 10 years ago across the board, but it has led to some kind of sloppiness in storytelling that I think is now might be a good time to pull back on.
Thanks a lot for that call, Rebecca, at 800-642-1234. Talking about changes in streaming TV with Sam Adams from Slate.com. Now, here's a show that's doing a little, something a little funky along these lines. One I've actually watched, and I'll say enjoyed. It's on Peacock, the show Poker Face. This is kind of giving the basic element here, this clip.
You're not reading the cards.
How could I read the cards?
You're reading me. It's not like it's one thing, like my eye twitches or something.
Nah.
It's just a general,
yeah.
You can just tell.
Just that something is off. That's the best way to describe it. I could just tell.
When anyone is lying, 100% of the time, I'm going to touch my nose.
No, it doesn't work like that. I'm not a soothsayer. I can't predict the future. There's nothing mystical about it. Just if someone is intentionally lying, that's it.
Okay, so this has a mystery of the week feel. It's got a character who walks the earth, different cast of characters every time. She solves the mystery. You could come in and out wherever you want. You know, there's things like the Fugitive or the Hulk or the A-Team. I don't know. This felt very old school to me. Is this a different way to tackle streaming, Sam?
It's both different and old, which is one of the things that I love about Poker Face. I mean, this is very, Rian Johnson, who created the show with Natasha Lyonne, has been very open that this is just Columbo with Natasha Lyonne instead of Peter Falk. And I mean, I'd give him all my money just for that synopsis. But yeah, this is a case of the week show. There's virtually no continuity from one episode to the next. When they sent out the screeners to press, they made a big deal about, you know what, you can watch these in any order you want, which is just, nobody makes TV like that anymore. And it's also a sort of golden age of streaming show in that Peacock, far and away above all the other streaming networks, is just losing money hand over fist. They lost $2.5 billion last year. They expect to lose $3 billion this year. They're the least watched and most expense and most money losing of all the streaming networks. But they're just, you know, taking Rian Johnson, this very successful director who made the Knives Out movies and The Last Jedi, throwing you a bunch of money saying like, hey, why don't you come up with a crazy idea and we'll give you money to do it. And this is, you know, so many of my favorite shows of the last 10 years kind of follow that pattern where it's just, here's an artist with a crazy idea. We don't know if anybody's going to like it or not, but we don't know what works in this medium yet. So let's just like give them some money and see what happens. And that's how you got Atlanta. That's how you got The Rehearsal last year. So, you know, because you got Orange is the New Black, you know, almost 10 years ago on Netflix. So many of the shows that really defined what has made the streaming era special for me. And those are, for me, I mean, those are Poker Face notwithstanding. Those are some of the things that are going away now. Those kind of little quirky shows, like some of the ones that got canceled last year, like Weatherford Falls, Los Espookies, Tuca and Birdie. Those were really just very niche, personal, idiosyncratic shows. And that's what has been so interesting about the last 10 years of TV for me. And that is one of the reasons why I think we're kind of over the peak and heading into the trough, is because those shows in particular seem to be the things that are getting cut, and I miss them.
Let's bring on another caller now. Jim is with us in Watertown. Jim, hi.
Hello. Thank you for taking the call. So I know this isn't really a product of the streaming that's going on now, but since this, you know, hurry up and get the program on the air mentality has got going, is the way I'm looking at it anyways, they've taken away the contrasting image of characters. Like, there used to be a lot of the good guy or the bad guy, and now it seems like they're trying to make everybody this multifaceted character, and that's great, but without the difference, the contrast, it really seems to be taking away from the content of the stories.
Jim, thanks a lot for the call. And Sam, this, like with the HBO prestige TV Sopranos, you got the anti-heroes or villain is hero, whatever you want to call it, Breaking Bad, Game of Thrones, probably the list goes on and on. I don't know. Have we overdone the getting away from good guys and bad guys?
Well, yeah, this is what's part of what's happened is, I mean, you mentioned Sopranos and Mad Men and The Americans, which again, I love. But yeah, this sort of prestige TV, not just as a descriptor of like, this is a really good show, but as a kind of mode of making TV, as a something that you can watch 2 minutes of and be like, oh, this wants to be prestige TV. Yeah, that's really kind of narrowed the range of things that are on the air. And what I think the caller was talking about is, you know, we used to think of as more like TV, like where there are good guys and bad guys. And, you know, Poker Face is a show like that, where like, mm-hmm. you know who the killers are right from the beginning. They're not good people. You know that the main character is going to catch them out and the crime's going to get solved. That kind of simplicity and I'd say predictability, not in a bad way, but that kind of comfort and regularity from it is something that I think maybe has been a little too overthought. And now you look at the success of a show like Abbott Elementary, which is the most successful new network sitcom in years. And I think there is a craving to get back to some of that sort of stuff. Like, just give me 22 minutes of funny characters 22 times a year, and I'm happy.
Thanks a lot for that call. Sam, in our last half minute, what is the big question you have for the rest of this year in streaming?
I mean, we're going to have to see, you know, how many of these new shows that are coming out. The executives I talked to point to, you know, all this great stuff that is coming, and we'll see if it's as great as the stuff that came out. But the writers and the creatives that I've talked to are really saying that this is the worst time that they can remember for trying to make something interesting. So we'll make up our list at the end of the year and see who comes out ahead.
Sam, thanks again for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Sam Adams is a senior editor at Slate.com. He joins us today with a look at the way streaming services are changing, adapting, what it all means for those of us who watch stuff. Music here, the theme song from Succession, just began its fourth and final season on HBO Max this weekend.